Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, and this is the edition of Senior Focus where we're focusing on aged care. So I'm welcoming Tracy Martin, the Honourable Tracy Martin, into the program. Thank you, Tracy, for being with us.
Oh, kia ora. Thank you for inviting me, Maddie. Mm-hmm. Anne-Marie.
And you've had an exciting trip abroad to Australia. We're going to canvass, really, why do we need a review of aged care in New Zealand? And I know that anybody who knows anything about aged care is aware there are shortages, there are gaps, both in beds and in staffing, and there's imbalances around the country in different areas. You've got more or less chance of getting a bed, and this is not equitable and it's not fair. So these are the issues that have been on the table for some time, and you've been drawing attention to them in various ways. And we have heard from you before, but for those who weren't in on that, I'm just trying to summarise the situation. Would you like to add anything to that summary, Tracy?
No, I think what you've highlighted, Anne-Marie, is the fact that we all know what the challenges are, so we don't need another review. And we've had at least three very expensive documents created, funded by taxpayers for the government over the last decade, that have each come up with exactly the same answer, which is that we have an ageing population. 25 to 28% of that population, 85 years is the average age of entry, average length of stay in residential care is 18 months, the sector is underfunded to provide the levels of care that those New Zealanders need. So the reason we went to Australia is the Australian government has actually recognised it and is doing something about it. And we wanted to know what was working for them, what wasn't working, what would be a good idea here, and what would not be a good idea here.
Mm-hmm. And you took a team with you, and would you like to articulate how that came about and who was on the team?
Sure. So I picked the team because I wanted not only to try and get cross-party understanding. So that's both. I took members from the two major political parties, so Sam Uffendale and Dr. Hamish Campbell from National. They happen to be the chair and the deputy chair of the Health Select Committee. We took Ingrid Leary, who's the Labor spokesperson for seniors, and she's also on the Health Select Committee. And we took the Honourable Pene Hanare, who's the Labor spokesperson, associate health spokesperson. So I took them because I don't care what political party comes up with the solution and implements the solutions. I just need as many political parties as possible, and particularly the major ones, to understand the problem and what a solution could be. But I also took the economist and director of policy, Craig Rennie, from the Council of Trade Unions. Because obviously there is a large workforce inside this sector, and we need to know what works well for them, how can we support them better, and how can we grow them. I took Catherine Hall, the chief executive of Alzheimer's New Zealand, because one in four New Zealanders is going to have dementia in the not too distant future. I took Wayne Naylor, the chief executive of Hospice New Zealand, because 100% of us are going to die. I took Mike Peters, who's the chief executive of what is the New Zealand Health Group. That's the largest publicly funded provider of in-home care, both for seniors and for disabled individuals. And I took Amy McLean, which is the general manager of Kate McLean Home Care, because she works with a group of private in-home care providers up in Auckland, and I wanted that mix inside the questions and inquiries and education that we got from that tour.
Wow, what a comprehensive group. And so spot on, covering all the major concerns and areas. Yeah, excellent.
Well, we have to, unfortunately, what's happened in this area, apart from government really ignoring what they've been told for a long time about the number of seniors that are here, that are coming, that are going to need residential care or in-home care. The agency, the government agency, has dealt with different parts of the care provision as silos. So they deal with the in-home care people separately from the residential care people, separately from palliative care. And I absolutely believe that we need to join all of us up so that we all work together to create what is a continuum of care across those last 20, 25 years of our life, to make sure that if we find ourselves in a circumstance where we need either in-home care or residential care or assistance as we die, then we are all connected up and we can provide that care to New Zealanders.
Yes, that idea that we need the continuum really means we need nothing to be invisible, nobody to be hidden, no lack of spotlighting what's important. Mm. And I think the only way you keep a continuous grip on the situation, and you look at trends and you look at areas that are working well and so on, is if you have everyone having the same conversation and on the same page.
Exactly.
So, on that account, let's turn to your visit across the Tasman, and what were the key learnings that came out of this trip?
Oh, well, it's timely because I just had a debrief with the majority of the tour members yesterday. So, we all agree on the things that we think New Zealand should look to adopt from Australia, and we also agree on the things that we need to be careful about post their reforms. So the first thing that we think New Zealand needs to look at is an independent pricing authority, and that is in Australia it's an organisation that is independent of government that actually uses data to say this is the care package that some individuals need, and this is what it actually costs to provide their care for that individual. And they give that data, they give those recommendations to government, and for the last 3 years, the Australian government has funded it to the level that the independent pricing authority has said. So we don't think necessarily that New Zealand needs to make one all of its own. We could enter into a contract with the Australian authority, and once every 3 years we could give them all of our data and get them to go through the algorithm and give us what is the prices that would be evidence-based.
Wow, yes, that sounds like a really sensible move.
Yeah, because at the moment, the way that the price for care is set between the funder, which is Health New Zealand, and our members is pretty much somebody puts their finger in the air and just picks a figure. So that's why the sector is underfunded. But we also think that the way that they have a more varied care packages instead of the blunt tools that we have here is a really good idea. We'd like to see that expanded with the new funding model. We'd like to see more transparency around what is funded. So clinical care should be separated out from accommodation, which should be separated out from living expenses, and that's what they've done in Australia. When they have separated that out, they're able to talk to Australian seniors and say, if you have enough money, you should be paying for your own accommodation and you should be paying for your own living expenses. But absolutely, there is a relationship with the state about the provision of your health care. So we think that that's something that could be brought over here to New Zealand, and we could have an intense conversation about asset and income thresholds over here. We think that there is some really interesting opportunities around having an independent task force made up of people, you know, representative groups like Grey Power, aged care, the aged care providers, the in-home care providers, economists, all those sort of people, in the same way that the Australians did. We think that that would be really valuable. There's a couple of things we don't think would be that great. There are some concerns about the enforcement of care minutes, which, while it sounds like a great idea to have a registered nurse for inside, you know, available for this many minutes for each individual person inside the facility, what they're finding over in Australia is it's not necessarily transferring into better outcomes for the citizen, for the person in care, and it's also having a really negative impact on rural and regional and smaller providers who can't get the staff, and so they can't meet the care minutes, so they're having to close. So we think there is some, you know, there's some care that needs to be taken before we just adopt anything like that rather blindly.
Yes, I'm aware that they've struggled in Australia in the rural areas with healthcare provision overall, everything from GPs to hospitals and to nursing care. So just holus bolus picking up what they're doing and parking it in New Zealand is not going to work.
No, and I
think that it's really good and really timely. Your expedition is fact-finding and evidence-based, and it's bringing back this clear information.
I think the other big thing that's really interesting that we have to accept, I do find myself having to explain it to quite a lot of people. When we talk about the fact we've got an ageing population, the flip side of that is we haven't got young people, the same amount of young people coming through. So the answer cannot just be, the answer to the shortage in GPs cannot just be train some more, because there isn't the younger generation coming through to train. And that's the same with registered nurses. So we are going to have to use technology to use the few general practitioners, the few registered nurses that are going to be available much more efficiently and effectively across the country. And it's not to say that a machine's going to diagnose people, but it does mean that we're going to need to use virtual nursing or virtual telehealth more often than we ever have before, and use the actual human being as the backup point for cases that absolutely must have a human-to-human interaction.
Yes, I think this is the only logical, reasonable outcome that we can expect in this kind of environment.
And
it actually can work quite well. I mean, there are examples being used in Japan where there's a very high senior population and too few youth, and particularly in the rural areas in Japan, it's really evident that they need to rely on virtual telehealth.
And I mean, I think there was a report done post-COVID in the Waikato where virtual nursing was allowed to be done so that healthcare workers were inside the facility and they were constantly supported by a virtual nursing team, let's say from a hospital further up the road. And the report says that it worked incredibly well during that period of time. But unfortunately, they're not allowed to continue using it. So we have a model in this country that worked really, really well. We've had a review of it. It says it worked well. We think that we need to be talking about how can we allow that to happen across the rest, in those areas of New Zealand that are losing all of their care capacity.
Yeah, we need to incentivise providers, owners of private facilities, as well as work out some innovative stream within the health sector itself, the public sector, so that we have got continuous involvement of people with this sort of model.
Mm. I can tell you now, Anne-Marie, if we had an evidence-based funding model, if the cost of care was actually paid for, like it's evidenced and it's paid for by the state, then a lot of our challenges would go away. And we have to remember that while it might be for hospital-level care, we have worked out, based on the Australian algorithm, that instead of $300-something, the government should be paying $500-something a day. But if that individual has the right to be in hospital, and the hospital bed costs $1,700 to $1,800 a day. So the savings are still there. The citizen still has the right to care. We just think that, and it would fix so many issues if we just switch to an evidence-based pricing model.
And I can think of many stories I've told on air of people whose elders were kept in hospital because there wasn't a bed in the community.
Yeah.
And you think of the wastage of that over months, in fact.
And it's also, it's not a great place to be a senior. I mean, there are infections, there are all sorts of things. Hospitals are places for acute services where people go to get fixed. And then they need to be looked after. If they can be looked after at home, that's fantastic. But if they can't, then they need a residential care facility.
That's right. And if we've got such a shortage now that we're using precious hospital beds to keep people in who can't get into a private care facility or a public one, then it's really, you know, I mean, it's just a no-brainer. We've just got to get the bull by the horns and really grapple with this and stop pretending the problem doesn't exist and pushing it in the back cupboard.
Exactly. And I mean, just to pick up on that, there are no public residential care facilities left in this country. I think you'll find that one of the last ones that was available was actually in Reefton, and it was shut down, 15 months ago. So the government decided right back in 1980s, 1990s, that it didn't want to be in the business of providing residential care to New Zealand seniors. That's why all of these private businesses, whether they are owner-operators, whether they are charities, not-for-profits, community trusts, or listed companies, that's why they are doing this, because the government said, well, we don't want to. And now what we need is the government to recognise that that doesn't mean that you're not responsible for providing for the citizen, because that's the key relationship, is between the government and their citizen, who's paid their taxes all their lives, who had an agreement with the government that if I needed clinical care, I could get it. So that's the key relationship, and we need to make sure that the government, any government, not just the current one, doesn't get let off the hook for that.
I think this is the heart of the problem, that we had a contract, a social contract, that existed between the citizens and the government, and that contract has gradually been nullified.
Yeah, been eroded. I don't disagree, actually. Don't disagree.
And it's been on the basis that really, seniors are the invisible group in society. They're the group that don't really get looked at and catered for. So, like, we've got to cater for young people, we've got to cater for the prison population, we've got to cater for this group and that group. But seniors, they've had their time, so we don't really need to worry about them. And it's this attitude that's at fault.
It's interesting, because I have to tell you, as the Minister for Seniors, it was very frustrating, and it's the same frustration in this job, is that most of the members of government don't really give any consideration to residential care or the needs of seniors until around about 3 months out from an election.
Mm.
And then they realise that it's one of the largest voting blocks in the country. And so suddenly they decide they'll go out and they'll see grey power and they'll go and do age concern and they'll visit a Rotary and a Lions and all that, right? Mm. And that's one of the reasons why I'm going up and down the country at the moment, talking to all of those groups and explaining to them, this is what's happening in residential care. Or this is what's not happening in residential care. But this is what the challenges are. And I'm trying to get individuals now to go and see their local MP or talk to the opposition member that is in their area, anybody they know who's a politician, and ask them, what are you going to do about residential care? And if they tell you, retirement villages, you say to them, no, that's a lifestyle choice. I'm talking about residential care. Because the politicians get quite muddled up with that.
They do indeed. Yep, I agree wholeheartedly. It's been an issue that I've raised many times and I'll unfortunately have to keep raising. But I do think we need to encourage people to step out and speak out and actually be active and proactive about this situation, because it's not rocket science. The numbers are quite clear. The situation is quite dire. It's not getting any better. Nothing is going to change if people can't adopt a longer-term lens to look at it through.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think the other thing, too, is we absolutely can provide care, residential care or in-home care, inside communities where people have lived and loved, but we're not doing it at the moment. Because we aren't there isn't a focus by government agencies or government to actually work up the way that it can be done, as opposed to the way that the system's always done it. And we're separating couples who might have been married for 50, 60 years, so because one of them may end up having dementia and the only place that they can be looked after safely is miles away in another town. And of course that leaves their partner is as old as they are. So, you know, we are separating up people that we don't need to separate up if we sat down together and said, we're going to fix this. There is a way to do it. Let's just work out how.
Yes, indeed. So, in terms of your comment about it's not cost-effective and timely to have a review in New Zealand. How do you, I mean, obviously you're working on a campaign of awareness, but how, and you're inviting people to put the emphasis on communicating with their MPs and their local opposition members and so on. But how do you see the impetus for getting change with the coalition government or getting a more joined up approach that would involve a bipartisan approach? How do you see getting the momentum for this?
Well, so one of the things that we have been asking government for is a ministerial task force. But post the Australian trip, and now we all agree, those of us who went on that trip, we all agree that we should have an independent task force with an independent chair, with members of the main political parties at least embedded into that task force, given a six-month period of time to develop what is the delivery model and price out what it would take to actually to fund the growth in standard beds, the ability of current members to expand or maintain or enhance what are their current provision, and to do better, to have an evidence-based pricing model. So that's that's the big thing we're pushing for at the moment, is an evidence-based and an independent task force. And I'll be pushing that either with current government, but also all the way through to the election, trying to get other political parties to make a commitment to that.
Mm. It seems like we need to have some spunky champions who who are really over this and are not afraid to talk about it. Not afraid to stand up, and we need one or two strong males, and we need ones who are good at statistics and, you know, got a good economic approach. Have you any ideas of who might fit that bill?
Well, I don't know that we just need some strong males, but I think what we need is we need the collective efforts of what are those who are prepared to raise their voice. And I mean, I'm activating those people. I think the people on my educational tour, they all are committed to making a positive impact on this issue for New Zealanders. So they, you know, they're going out from the tour now into the sectors that they are in, and in every conversation they're having with government agencies, they are repeating this call for action. So I think we've got a motion going. It's just everybody should jump on board and do their little piece to keep raising this issue as we head towards the general election next year.
Yes, I agree. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again on this. And I look forward to having a panel in our studio, actually teasing out some of the reactions they've had when they've gone to the politicians. I think this, getting this discussion expanded is an important role.
Great. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. So today I'm really pleased that I've caught you at this moment, because it seems like a very pivotal time. We've just had the assessment from the team of people who went, and you're all fired up, and good luck to you, and may you power into an effective outcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Anne-Marie.
All right, so thanks for being with us, Tracy. It's always good to have you on, and when the call ends, I will have another little surprise for you. So thank you very much again.
Kia ora.
Okay, bye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Close that door, leave the world outside. Ain't no need for rushing, we got all night. Your eyes say you're ready, but your heart's unsure. Come a little closer, girl, I'll show you more. Lay it all on me, your love, your fears, your pain. Every part you're hiding, girl, I'll take the strain. Ain't no need for cover, ain't no need to hide. Lay it all on me. Don't have to whisper, I can hear your soul. I feel the tremble, baby, when you lose control. Let the walls come down, let the truth come through. Ain't no judgment here, I'll carry you. Lay it all on me.